Welcome to Bayou to Beltway. I'm your host, Pearson Cross. We are joined today by a guest who's going to sort out some of the things that are happening in the Middle East for us, something that probably a lot of people feel like they need. We're joined by Dr. Jennifer Dumas. Dr. Dumas is a professor, an assistant professor at ULM. She is a native. She was born in West Monroe, went to West Ouachita High School from ULM, got her PhD at the University of New Orleans, worked for a while at Tulane, and then came up here, and she's now in her fourth year. Her area of expertise is international relations and political violence, so it really seems like she's in exactly the right spot. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Good. So, none of this is news to you. United States attacked Iran, insisted, enabled, accompanied by Israel. Were you surprised when this happened, and have we seen the script before?
I was only partially surprised by this. We did have some pretty strong signals ahead of time that this might be coming, the amount of military assets that we moved into the region is a pretty good indicator that we were not going to back down. The rhetoric coming from the White House was signaling frustration with the nuclear negotiations process with Iran. And then, of course, Israel has adopted a posture that, you know, they would like to see regime change in Iran through a military intervention for some time. That being said, it does appear that this caught the Iranians and other Gulf nations and our allies by surprise.
Why, if I could interrupt, why would that catch anyone by surprise? It takes a while to put those assets in place. So we're moving aircraft carriers into striking position. All the planes were kind of gathering around. So why would it catch anybody by surprise?
Well, I think that they may have believed that this would be maybe too big a gamble for the U.S. and Israel because of all of the potential ramifications, some of which we're seeing play out right now on the energy markets and global markets more broadly, and because of the differing goals that the U.S. and Israel might have for such an intervention, and because we were in the middle of negotiations, and it appears that, you know, we were still signaling to the Iranians, to Oman, who was the host of the negotiations, that we were not necessarily very happy about where they were going, but we were still coming to the table.
So we kind of walked out of the negotiations and then started the attack.
Yes.
So what's different about this war compared to other wars? And I know that's a big topic, but you know, there have been some recent wars in the Middle East, you know.
Right.
It seems like every decade we have a Middle East war, you know.
It does, yes. It's too early to say if this is going to be fundamentally different from a lot of the other conflicts that we've had recently, but I do see some immediate differences from some of our most recent conflicts. One is our, you know, sort of diplomatic posture. The fact that we're really partnered with Israel, but not our European allies who have gone in with us on similar types of missions and actions in the Middle East. And in fact, we've had some pretty heated back and forth between the U.S. and traditional allies like the U.K. and Spain, Canada, over the legality of this, the potential outcomes, and, you know, whether or not this was a wise decision. So our diplomatic posture is one difference. The goals that we're pursuing are not entirely clear. They appear to be different depending on who you talk to and when you talk to them. For Israel, it appears that they are pretty focused on a regime change in Iran. The U.S. has expressed a lot of different goals, some of which include regime change, some of which stop short of that. So we don't appear to be on the same page about what we want, and that could have major ramifications for how this goes.
So in previous wars that I remember, I don't know that we made such a concerted effort to take out their leadership. And this kind of adds a new... So we just went in and tried to decapitate particularly the military side of Iranian leadership. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is that fairly unprecedented, and why this change?
Yes, certainly in this context, it's a bit unprecedented that we would go in with that particular strategy. My sense on this, and this is coming from some of the reporting on this, is that this is motivated in part because of how militarily successful we were in Venezuela not too long ago in going in a very surgical strike in Venezuela and taking President Nicolas Maduro and his wife and bringing them back to the United States for trial. The sense is that we might have thought we could do something similar in this context in Iran, and that if we were to knock out the top leadership, that might precipitate a complete collapse of the regime.
So this is regime change by taking out the leadership, or an attempt. Do so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been, and this, of course, I don't really think this is, I mean, first of all, the attack, people have been saying the attack wasn't really done according to international law. Mm-hmm. And I guess going after, it's considered bad after the leaders of the attacking country. And typically they don't do that, right? I don't remember. I mean, blowing up Saddam Hussein's presidential palace, you know, was an option, but it was not one that we exercised.
Right.
So what's changed? Is it just the person in the seat in the White House, or is it something else?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is really about, one, it's part of a broader trend of really setting aside some of the usual precedent in American foreign policy and in some of the broader traditions of international law, the parameters of international law. And part of it also is the strategic side of things, is a sort of reading that, you know, if we carry this out successfully, that may be our best chance of doing this without putting boots on the ground.
Mm. You know, there have been a number of interesting articles about, you know, what effect this is going to have on the Middle East. Mm-hmm. And if you go back and think about, there was an article written that I was found quite persuasive talking about the Middle East being completely remade in the last 36 months. And by the way, if you just tuned in, we're talking to Dr. Jennifer Dumas about the Middle East and the conflict, particularly with Iran. But if you go back to the Gaza attack, the October 7, you look at that and, you know, things are almost unrecognizable in the Middle East, and a lot of things have changed. So what do you think, although it's very early, this war will do in terms of the balance of power and trade in the Middle East?
Well, I mean, again, yeah, you're correct. It really depends on where things go from here. And we may be days, weeks out from the end of this conflict. We don't know. But I think that this is really going to be a war of attrition for Iran. I think that they are going to view this as if they can simply wait it out, then they will be able to hang on to some semblance of power. The regional hegemons now are very clearly Israel and Saudi Arabia. But their image is somewhat dented by this and the other Gulf nations, in the sense that they were seen as fairly safe havens for travel, tourism, foreign investment, partly because of, you know, the presence of U.S. military forces and bases in the region. And that, you know, shield has been partially penetrated now with this conflict and the missiles and drone attacks coming from Iran and its allies.
Or has it been strengthened? I mean, you can make an argument now that the U.S. is in an even more commanding position, militarily at least, in the Middle East, if not diplomatically. And speaking of which, How is the Middle East taking this new offensive? Did we let anybody in inside the room and tell them this was going to happen, or were they all caught flat-footed?
It sounds as though we had been potentially workshopping the idea with some of our Gulf allies, but it sounds as though they were not enthusiastic about this and had been really lobbying against something like this for some time. Clearly none of them want a nuclear-empowered Iran. Clearly none of them want Iran to be able to continue funding its proxies in the region, which have sown chaos and destruction for years. Now the fact that Iran has been able to hold on as long as it has against a really overwhelming military campaign against them, it speaks to the uncertainty of where this is going and how resilient the regime will be in the coming days and what the next regime is going to look like.
You know, Iran's been around and been a thorn in the side of America since 1979.
Mm-hmm.
So why now? Why in this presidency? Why in this political setting did the United States just decide to have done with it and go after them directly?
Well, I think that's the $64,000 question is really the timing on this. You know, you might ask, you know, why didn't we do this back in June when we did the strikes on their military, I mean, their nuclear sites then? We don't really know. The calculus, I think, it seems pretty elusive. And I think the fact that we keep hearing different motivations and rationales being put forward is only kind of clouding the picture on why this had to occur now and what the end game is.
You know, I'm, of course, asking you to peer into a crystal ball, which probably you don't have, but what effect is this going to have on our allies in Europe and elsewhere? Will they get involved slowly, or are they going to take part? Or are they going to watch from the sidelines?
They're already being reluctantly pulled into this. Initially, the UK said they did not want their bases to be used for U.S. Operations for this, but they've had to change their stance on that as the war has expanded and some British assets and citizens are coming under fire. France has been directly pulled in by Lebanon to try to intercede in the escalation between Israel and Lebanon and Hezbollah. We've had Turkey that now has had some attacks on its territory. So, I think that our allies are increasingly, you know, even though they're very reluctantly wanting to get involved in this, they are being pulled in.
One of the things that pointed out the complexity of the whole situation to me was the issue of the Kurds, and the Kurds are on, I guess, you know, both sides of Iran, different Kurds and different alignments there. And they've been our allies, but we have a history of abandoning them, getting them to support us and then saying, well, thanks, bye.
We do.
So it's pretty hard to see how this is all going to play out, isn't it?
It is.
For all the parties.
It is. And I think, again, you see some of the, you know, shifting tactics and dynamics of this in the fact that in just a couple of days' time, we've gone from, you know, we want them to be involved and then we don't want them to be involved, as part of a sort of ground invasion force. So, I think things are, it's the fog of war. We are trying to figure this out.
Boy, the fog of war is right. And right now, we are neither Cassandra nor anyone else. We are Merlin. We can't look into a ball and see the future. But I think you've done a good job of helping us understand it. Thanks so much. We've been talking today to Dr. Jennifer Dumas of the ULM Political Science Department. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.